This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Podcast of Audio Reading Service volunteers reading the Journal Gazette is provided by the Allen County Public Library for the sight and print impaired and made available with the permission and cooperation of the Journal Gazette.
We will now read the Weekender section from the Friday, September 26th Journal Gazette. And here is Stuart with the horoscopes.
From Holiday Mathis, Creators Syndicate. Aries, March 21 to April 19. It's true that your road hasn't exactly been an easy one, but however you got here, it made you stronger and more unique. Let the story of your challenges fortify and fuel you instead of sour you against those who had an easier time of it. Taurus, April 20 to May 20. Mental rehearsal will make the day feel more familiar, doable, and within your control. You'll pause before starting your adventure. You'll picture specific scenes. Be sure to imagine not just the actions, but also how success feels. Gemini, May 21 to June 21. Love is risky, awkward, and endlessly worthwhile. The odd compliment or ask laughter shared in nervous voices, these are treasures. You're brave enough to risk embarrassment for connection, and that courage will echo back to you in admiration. Cancer, June 22 to July 22. The longing for rest is real, but you're not running on empty. Small refuels will sustain you more than you expect, and you can be refueled by a smile, a stretch, a song, or just a pause. Your soul finds the replenishment it needs. Leo, July 23 to August 22. Joy doesn't have to be huge or constant to count. It arrives in flashes. It's a private laugh, a stranger's compliment, a beautiful sky. Collect those sparks. Together, they are enough to set your spirit alight and carry you forward. Virgo, August 23 to September 22. In certain kinds of encounters, timing and confidence matter more than preparation. Such a moment is coming your way, and you can win without trying too hard because the winning instinct is already in you. Libra, September 23 to October 23. Sometimes feeling confident takes work, but not today. It's much easier to keep yourself in high regard when the people around you are doing the same. The enthusiastic belief people have in you will play like a tailwind assisting your progress. Scorpio, October 24 to November 21. Your body aches from effort, but it's also alive with fire. Listen to your muscles, give them kindness, and know that no state is permanent. The recuperation will happen when you rest. Healing will come just as surely as fatigue does. Sagittarius, November 22 to December 21. You're easy on the senses, speaking in the tones that comfort and assure, looking the part, offering what's useful and convenient. Because of this, you're offering as much work as you need and the kind of fun you most enjoy. Capricorn, December 22 to January 19. You've already done the work. There's no need to defend or explain it in any way. Respect and admiration are coming to you. And all you have to do is remember not to deflect them when they do. Receive your due. Aquarius, January 20 to February 18. When you were younger, you blurted the feeling, the answer, the need. You're no longer tempted to flood the space with information. Now your communication is measured. Others lean in and pay closer attention. Pisces, February 19 to March 20. We stand in circles of feeling, pride and shame, joy and grief, regret and gratitude are all bound up together until they almost overlap. That's the human condition. You're emotionally alive and holding the paradox of life. Today's birthday. Welcome to your year of Genesis. Intellectual sparks fly, and you'll win with ideas in boardrooms, studios, classrooms, and competitions. The world is your arena, and your wit is your superpower. More highlights: super sweet relationships, one that will sparkle season after season, a journey you weren't planning on that opens an extra new chapter, and a life hack that becomes a cornerstone of health. Scorpio and Aquarius adore you. Your lucky numbers are 2, 16, 28, 39, and 10.
Okay, we will continue to Dear Annie. Be tough with indulgent granny. Dear Annie, my husband and I have a 3-year-old daughter, and we're trying to raise her with structure, regular bedtime, limited screen time, and no sweets before meals. The problem is my mother-in-law. She watches our daughter twice a week, and despite repeated conversations, she ignores every boundary we set. She lets her stay up late, gives her fast food for lunch, and parks her in front of cartoons for hours. My husband agrees it's a problem, but he struggles to confront his mom. I don't want to be the bad guy, but I also don't want to spend the next few years undoing the habits my child picks up over there. How do I set firmer boundaries with someone who thinks the rules don't apply to her? From Mom, Not the Mean One. Dear Mom, Not the Mean One, your mother-in-law's job is to love your child, not override your parenting because she misses the good old days of sugar before bedtime. Talk to your husband first. If he's not willing to step up, then he at least needs to have your back when you enforce the rules. Then face your mother-in-law. If she wants to keep babysitting, she needs to follow your parenting guidelines. If she can't, then she loses babysitting privileges. Period. Okay. Dear Annie, I have lunch once a month with my friend of more than 20 years, Patrice. Lately, though, all she talks about are her perfectly wonderful children and grandchildren. She doesn't ask about my adult children, and I don't have grandchildren myself. It has become uncomfortable, almost like she's saying, "Look what I have that you don't." I don't know that she's deliberately trying to hurt my feelings, but either way, it's really starting to hurt. Now, I find myself making excuses and canceling lunches to avoid her and feeling this way. Should I speak up, or should I continue to applaud her good fortune, flawless children, and incredible grandchildren? From Worn Out Old Ear. Dear Old Ear, I see why you're drained. You go to lunch expecting to catch up with an old friend, but instead you're stuck at the Patrice show. Even if she doesn't mean to come across this way, it's a lot to take, and it's worn you down. You can either keep ducking out or be direct. Try something like, "Patrice, I'd love it if you asked about my family too." Short, simple, and true. If she values your relationship, she'll hear you. If she dismisses it, you'll know she prefers you as her audience rather than as her friend.
Next is Heloise. Parents must put learning first. Dear Heloise, I read with interest the letter from Margaret about reading and our children. I know we all have busy lives, but children and their education are very important. Teaching them to sound out words and read is only the beginning. The American educational system actually begins in the home with parents who devote time each day to helping their children learn basic reading and math skills. Every child should be able to read simple sentences and do simple math before they start kindergarten. Parents need to back up teachers and start demanding more from their children. Don't accept bad grades. If there is a problem at school, talk to the teachers and find out what it is. If the problem is bullying, demand that the bullies be expelled from school. If your child is the bully, don't make excuses for them. Instead, make it clear that bullying is not allowed and take steps to stop them. Remember this, unless you have the cure for cancer or the secret to world peace, you will never leave anything behind in this world more important than your children. From a retired school teacher in Ohio. Dear Heloise, I saw a letter where the reader mentioned dishwasher pods and that they were capable of cleaning fried foods off plates. I used pods and found that effluent was coming out of the air gap vent on the sink, so I dismantled all the pipes under the sink all the way to the outer drain pipe. I was shocked to find a glutinous material lining the pipes and restricting the effluent flow, causing it to back up into the dishwasher. I used scraper tools, scoured out the material, and found that it was plastic. It became apparent that the plastic pods would melt in the hot water from the dishwasher, but when the effluent was pumped out through the pipes, the water rapidly cooled. The plastic, which was in suspension, then reformulated at a lower temperature and clogged the pipe, which blocked the outflow. I wrote to the company to advise them of the problem, and I received a very loyally and intimidating letter claiming that their product was excellent and that they denied liability or responsibility. These pods are a real problem. If the plastic doesn't reformulate inside the house pipes, then it will reformulate inside the city system. We switched to granular detergent after I scoured the pipes, and I've had no problem since. It might help your readers to know of this plastic pod problem. From a reader via email.
And now advice from Carolyn Hacks. Carolyn Hacks is a Washington Post Writers Group columnist whose work appears Fridays and Saturdays. Husband should keep promise to wife about where to live. Dear Carolyn, 3 years ago, I got an excellent job opportunity, chief of surgery at a hospital in a fairly remote area. My wife was reluctant to make the move since she's a scientist and there were no jobs for her within 100 miles. We finally agreed that I'd take the job and we'd live here for 4 years while I got the experience and then move back. My wife ended up teaching high school biology at a really nice private school near our home. I think we have a great life now, a beautiful 2-year-old daughter, a spacious home with a gorgeous view, friendly neighbors. We can afford a full-time nanny, which would have been a stretch back home. I had hoped my wife would come to love it too, but she's already counting down the days until we leave. I asked her recently about staying longer, and she said, "I'd literally rather die." A little melodramatic, but she got her point across. I love my wife, and I am not the kind of man to back out on a deal, but I love it here and dread leaving. What do we do? A promise is a promise, but life gets in the way. Signed, Dread Leaving. Dear Dread Leaving, no, it doesn't. Self-interest gets in the way. Unless you're suggesting you'd be open to teaching at your family's next stop, or insurance work, or telehealth, if the market for surgeons is soft, and really, you know, give the place a chance. Your wife is a scientist going out of her mind teaching high school biology as a personal sacrifice to help you get your career established. There was a chance she would take to being a private school teacher, yes, okay, I understand, you get your hopes up, alas. To suggest this was her fault is grossly unfair. Leaving a place you've grown to love is hard stuff. I won't pretend you aren't facing a painful sacrifice now yourself. I am sorry for that. Relocating for one at the expense of the other is one of the toughest challenges for couples. The mature work of giving your next place a chance, whether you think your partner did with the last one or not.
Tabari McCoy, A Comic with Gripes, Dreams. By Corey McMakin of the Journal Gazette, Tabari McCoy describes himself as a simple man in his 40s, finding humor in all my frustrations. He's bringing his comedy act to the Summit City Comedy Club on Thursday. This is McCoy's third time performing at the club and the first time as a headliner there. The Cincinnati-based comedian has released two albums through Rooftop Media and has a one-hour stand-up special, Be Happy, available on YouTube. McCoy answered these questions via email. The conversation has been edited. Question, what drew you to comedy? He responds, I've always loved stand-up ever since I remember being in a department store in the 1980s. While my mom was shopping, a TV was playing a stand-up concert by a very famous but now disgraced comedian who was sitting in a chair, and I was captivated listening. To take words and make them so funny, it was nearly impossible not to laugh. Ever since that moment, I always thought about being on a stage in front of people, not so much to be a star, but simply for the joy of that moment and being able to bring it to other people. Question, what does it mean to switch to a headlining slot? In comedy, you typically have three slots on a show unless it's a theater gig. The host or MC, the feature act, and the headliner. As you get better at your craft, you're supposed to progress up the ladder. However, depending on your credits, a crowd's reaction, where you live, and or where a booking agent thinks of you, you might plateau and be stuck as a host or feature act. To become a headliner means that you have to put in your time. You've proven that you can go up and be entertaining for at least 45 minutes, can handle adversity, and that once people see your name on the bill, they will say, this comic must be good. They're headlining. Of course, not every comic is for everyone based on their material and language, but it means the venue definitely thinks you are going to be for a lot of people who will come out. It can take time to build a following, although with social media, you can get one really quickly, which has its pros and cons, too. That might explain why that person with the really funny 30-second sketch or clip wasn't able to hold the stage down for 45 minutes. Do your research, people. Question, why do you think frustrations are such a good source of comedy? There are several reasons. First, most great stories involve a moment of embarrassment or utter frustration, either because of something someone did or said. The juxtaposition of the ridiculous and stupid versus common sense has been an ongoing battle since the dawn of time, and there isn't anything happening in 2025 that's going to change that. Second, it helps to vent when something frustrating or insane is happening to like-minded people, or at least those who can hear and appreciate them. Lastly, watching other people suffer can be hilarious, from a safe distance. Do you think America's funniest home videos stayed on the air for years because of cute kids? Nope. It was watching grown adults fall down, get accidentally struck by various objects, and injuring themselves. Question, is there anything that you hope your show makes people think about differently or talk about to their friends? Like, I saw this comedian last night and... Of course, any comedian who says otherwise is lying. In the old days, every comic grew up dreaming of getting on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. A 5-minute late night set could see him call you over to sit down on the couch, and then you were made. TV networks would come running with developmental deals and opportunities. Then, with the onset of cable, everyone was trying to get an HBO special, just like people today are trying to go viral. Build up a social media following. I'm so bad with posting content on TikTok, as that is a full-time job in and of itself. My hope for my show is simple. People who have seen me before come out and enjoy some new jokes they've never heard. They bring a friend who may have never heard of me before, and both of them leave saying, that was a good time. The next time he's in town, I'll be back to see what else he has to say. Then, I'll be back for a full weekend where every show is sold out, People are bringing me gifts and buying me dinner around town. Women are screaming my name as I enter the venue and leave the stage. A man can dream. Question, what's your dream show? Man, I used to want an HBO special of my very own for years. Then, before it became the network that just plays reruns of Futurama, Seinfeld, The Office, and South Park, I used to want my own Comedy Central Presents special. But now a dream show for me would have my name on front of some stand-up comedy's most legendary venues, like the Comedy Store in Los Angeles or the Comedy Cellar in New York. But headlining at the Summit City Comedy Club is a great start.
There are several art exhibits available this weekend. One is called Down the Rabbit Hole. It opens Wednesday and ends November 1st. It's the work of Chase and Audrey Peterson, Ruth Kumler Art Gallery at 1107 Broadway. Also, Ghost Army, the combat con artists of World War II. It ends October 26th. Fort Wayne Museum of Art, 311 East Main Street. You can go to fwmoa.org for more information. Date changed for mural dedication. The date has been changed for the celebration to dedicate a public art installation on Pearl Street. Downtown Fort Wayne's Art This Way program announced that the dedication will be from 6:30 to 8 p.m. October 1st. It was previously announced for September 30. An installation by five artists on the building at 222 Pearl Street will be dedicated during the event. The project includes music-themed murals in seven spaces on the west and north sides of the building facing Pearl Street's Art Center. Sculpture to be celebrated Monday. An Allen County Bicentennial sculpture will be dedicated at its permanent home next week. Southeast Love by Bonnie Andrews is located on the northwest corner of Ivan Lebomoff Reservoir Park at South Clinton Street and Creighton Avenue. The park is within the Lorez neighborhood. The dedication at 1 p.m. Monday will include the artist, Mayor Sharon Tucker, neighborhood leader Pat Turner, and public art consultant Alexandra Hall. The piece is one of 15 sculptures painted in 2024 as part of the county's Bicentennial Sculpture Project. Each of the identical fiberglass forms was designed with a different community in mind and painted with unique elements. Installation of the Bicentennial Sculptures began in fall 2024. ArtLink plans party to launch auction. Tickets are available for ArtLink Bash, an art auction launch party from 5 to 8 p.m. October 9th at the Downtown Gallery, 300 East Main Street. Attendees will receive early bidding access to the fund to the annual fundraiser auction, hear live music, and be able to enjoy themed cocktails and hors d'oeuvres. Tickets are $75 at artlinkfw.org. The gallery and online auction is open to the public October 10 to 12. Proceeds benefit ArtLink's exhibitions, program development, and local artists. We will now read the perspective section for Friday, September 26th. The opinions expressed are those of the writers and not necessarily the opinions of the Audio Reading Service, the Allen County Public Library, Northeast Indiana Public Radio, PBS Fort Wayne, or your readers, Jennifer or
Stewart
or Mitchell.
And now, here's Stewart with the first item.
A letter to the editor by Larry O'Malley of Fort Wayne, entitled MAGA's Many Cruelties Undermine American Way. Donald Trump's MAGA party has been busy. Our divisions are growing. Democracy is losing ground. MAGA's pursuit of riches is leading to increasing disparity in the distribution of wealth. Bullying our citizens and former allies increases man's inhumanity to man. Trump repeatedly shows no respect for our laws, customs, and promises. In the history of man, power and wealth have usually ruled. The result has been favored treatment for the few, mistreatment or disregard for everyone else. But once upon a time was the American Revolution. Our founding fathers tried something different, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. MAGA is using our representative form of government to trash our founding fathers' approach. The supermajority Republican government in Indiana uses similar methods. Any government is far from perfect, but for a country of such great wealth, to deny people basic human needs or rights while increasing our debt is selfish and greedy. The strength of our democracy is in considering all approaches and finding compromises to best promote the general welfare. But Trump uses personal whim and prejudice to dictate policy. It takes no effort to sign an executive order to overrule years of sacrifice by the many. Governing is difficult. Dictating is easy. It makes me sick that this is the best we can do. MAGA is self-righteous, self-centered, and mean. This is not something to be proud of. Winning fair elections is crucial. That means addressing voters' needs and respecting their goals, and convincing them that democracy is the best hope for most of us. Let us unite behind the American pledge of liberty and justice for all. What matters most is how we treat one another.
Health Info retrenchment is a national disgrace. I'm disturbed and disappointed in our government's Health and Human Services Department. The firing of qualified individuals at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is deplorable. There should be firings at the very top of this department. Congress should be ashamed of approving an unqualified person, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., to lead this department. Let me give a little history lesson, even though learning from our history is not popular these days. My grandmother was pregnant with her sixth child when she contracted measles. The result was death for her and the child she was carrying. This left a family of five children and two stepchildren motherless. What a tragedy. But there were no vaccines in her day. I cannot understand why today, when we have the MMR vaccine available, individuals are making the choice not to vaccinate their children. I also remember as a child how children who had measles had to stay in a darkened room for fear of damage to their eyesight. Why would you take these chances? To eradicate measles, we need to maintain herd immunity of 95%. That means that we are all in this together. If a large enough percentage of our population chooses not to vaccinate against measles, it puts many more in danger. I recently saw this ad on TV. That love thy neighbor part? I meant that. God. I'm not a medical person, just a concerned citizen, mother, and grandmother. Margaret Schrock in Grable.
The following is a Journal Gazette editorial. Executive overreach. Speech threats expose state's weakness, mistrust. Here we go again. In the wake of Charlie Kirk's assassination, Governor Mike Braun warned that teachers could lose their licenses over tasteless or celebratory posts. Attorney General Todd Rokita followed Monday with a six-page memo urging schools that it would be wise to remove such educators. Let's stipulate two obvious points. Political violence is wrong. Gloating over a killing is grotesque. But Braun's blanket threat and Rokita's maximalist guidance risk turning a moment for sober-minded judgment into a campaign for public shaming and summary punishment. The Attorney General's memo leans hard on workplace speech case law to argue schools have substantial authority to fire teachers over off-duty posts, even without actual disruption. This is a capricious standard that invites officials to punish speech they merely predict will offend. That's a slippery slope for any democracy, let alone classrooms that depend on trust and viewpoint diversity. Rokita, who has a record of speaking first and lawyering later, now positions his office as arbiter of moral authority in education by compiling complaints on a public portal and spotlighting a South Bend teacher as Exhibit A. The line between condemning cruelty and policing dissent blurs quickly when punishment becomes the point. Braun's statement gestures at the First Amendment before racing past it. Yes, truly threatening or inciting speech crosses a line, but state action must be narrow, evidence-based, and proportionate. The potential revocation of a license over ugly, non-threatening commentary is a broad overreach that earns cheers from some while chilling the very civic culture we claim to defend. Or are state leaders only for free speech as it applies to their ideological predilections rather than a deeper, broader standard? We can hold educators to professional standards without enlisting the state to patrol their social media posts. The better path is the harder one. Require schools to document real disruption, demand transparent processes, and teach how free people condemn bad speech without criminalizing it. If we replace prudence with performative crackdowns, we'll learn the wrong lesson from a terrible act, that the loudest grievance wins. We would say that our leaders ought to know better, but do they?
An opinion piece by Frank Hill, a Fort Wayne resident and writer, entitled Role of a Lifetime, What's His, What's Hers, and What's in Between. It is Friday morning, and it is trash pickup day in your neighborhood. It's 5 a.m., and you feel an elbow nudging you. It's your spouse. She asks, did you remember to set out the trash last night? Initially, you are offended that your wife would ask the question. A split second before responding curtly, you realize you did forget. Still in your pajamas, you throw on a coat and slip into the bunny rabbit house slippers that your teenage son forgot to take to college. You knew he did not forget, but you did not blame him. You go into the garage, open the door, and see lightning flashing in the distance. You think you hear thunder, but it could be the garage truck up at the corner. You grab the garage container by the handle and drag it to the curb as you are at the end of your driveway. The neighbor's teenage daughter snaps a photograph of you. She has been assigned to take candid photos for her high school photography class. That photo of you will be purchased by your wife for inclusion with your annual Christmas newsletter. Your wife thinks it's funny, but see it as a motivation for revenge. You file it away mentally, knowing that your wife wonders how you will eventually get even with her. The garbage container duties illustrate one unstated but informal aspect of marriage. The two of you have settled into roles. Later that day, your mother will call. Though you are married and served in the Army, your mother will be happy to have the storm as an excuse to ask whether your wife is feeding her only son well. You hand the phone to your wife and let her exaggerate what she did to those hot dogs she served last night. 5 minutes after that phone call, your wife's mother calls. She will ask her daughter if you, the man who whisked her away before she could fulfill her mother's dreams for her, are treating her like a queen. There are many reasons two people join forces to go about the vicissitudes of life. An obvious reason, for example, is to grab the dictionary and look up the definition of vicissitudes. The husband lets the dog out. The wife takes the kids to school. Back home after leaving the kids at school, the patient wife reads the instruction manual for the cell phones, the computer, and the television. The impatient husband tells her to hurry up. The big game will be on television on Saturday. An area of disputed responsibility is determining which of you misplaced the remote control for the television. You, a respected man in the community, could not possibly have lost the remote. You are convinced you saw your wife throw the remote onto the flower garden. She had been holding it in her ear and taking it for 45 minutes. She thought the remote was her cell phone and threw it in disgust when her friend never said anything. Normally, you, the husband, would laugh and not care. However, you need your wife to find the remote control for the television, then find the phone and call your boss. You want her to tell him you do not feel well and will not make it into work that day. Actually, it's true. You will not be there. It's a beautiful outside day, and you want to go play golf. Looking out for each other is what spouses do. Sometimes, however, you need a child. A daughter comes in handy when you want to go to a Taylor Swift concert. You use the excuse that you, the father, do not want her to go unaccompanied so you can magnanimously agree to join her. Your wife says, no, no, no. Then she adds, I am the mother. I should go. You look at your wife. You say, it couldn't be that you hope you will see Travis Kelce there, would it? You would be happy to take your daughter. Taylor Swift might walk up to you and say, I want to dance with you. She might.
The men who likely saved the world, with likely being in parentheses. On October 26, 1983, Lieutenant Colonel Stanislav Petrov sat in a Soviet command bunker outside Moscow staring at a screen that told him five American ballistic missiles were on the way. He paused. I had a funny feeling in my gut, he would say years later. Petrov, who was only on duty thanks to another country's controller's illness, dared to question the machine. And in the hesitation, the world may have been spared annihilation. Petrov's call was correct. The attack was sunlight bouncing off clouds. But it was also a reminder that our most sophisticated machines, then and now, can fail spectacularly. The fate of humanity ought not depend on error codes or split-second readings, yet it often does. It is one of history's hidden moments. Unlike the Cuban Missile Crisis, which was 21 years earlier, Petrov's decision wasn't splashed across front pages or dissected in think tanks. For decades, it was buried in secrecy. Yet the context makes it all the more chilling. Just weeks earlier, the Soviets had shot down Korean Airline Flight 007, killing 269 people. The air was thick with paranoia. And weeks later, NATO's Able Archer war game, which included a simulated use of tactical nuclear weapons, would convince Moscow that the West was preparing a first strike. Soviet air units in East Germany and Poland were placed on high alert, as were nuclear-capable bombers and submarines. Sensing Soviet reaction, U.S. Air Force General Leonard Perutz, chief of Air Force Intelligence in Europe, chose not to escalate NATO's alert posture. It was another quiet act of restraint that helped prevent catastrophe. Today, as the U.S.-China rivalry hardens and Russia raises nuclear anxieties again, we spin toward another Cold War. Artificial intelligence and automated defense systems promise speed, but did they also strip away doubt, skepticism, and pause? These are the very qualities Petrov and Perutz displayed. At a time when diplomacy and caution have been eclipsed by saber rattling and shows of force, we can only hope such courage still exists. Find out more at nsarchive.gwu.edu/project/able-archer-83-sourcebook.
And now Stuart will read primetime TV listings for Friday, September 26th.
On Channel 15, Wayne TV, CBS, at 8 p.m., Big Brother, at 9 p.m., Fire Country, and at 10 p.m., Blue Bloods. On Channel 21, WPTA, ABC, at 8 p.m., Celebrity Wheel of Fortune, and at 9 p.m., 2020. On Channel 21.2, WPTA2, NBC, at 8 p.m., Brilliant Minds. At 9 p.m., Dateline, NBC. On Channel 39, WFWA, PBS, at 8 p.m., Washington Week. At 8:30, Firing Hoover. At 9 p.m., 38th Hispanic Heritage Awards. And at 10 p.m., Voices, Omara, Cuba's legendary diva. And on Channel 55, WFFT Fox, at 8 p.m., Murder in a Small Town. And at 9 p.m., College Football, TCU at Arizona State.
We're going to read a few local sports highlights next, but if you love sports, tune in Mondays at 1:30 and 10:30 p.m. and Tuesdays at 6 a.m. for Spotlight on Sports with stories from Sports Illustrated Magazine. Or tune in every Sunday afternoon at 4:30 p.m. and Monday mornings at 6 a.m. and listen to a full hour of the past week's local, regional, and national sports stories during Sports and Review. And now Stuart will start with the first local sports highlight.
In this week's Power Poll, Battle of the Best could set the tone in SAC by Victoria Jacobson of the Journal Gazette. Week 5 was a rough one for a lot of our area's latest schools. The six Class 5 and 6A teams in Northeast Indiana went a combined 2-for-4, with only Carroll 47-14 win over Snyder, and Northrop 47-6 victory at Concordia coming out ahead. The Bruins are the only team from this group with 4 wins at the halfway mark, and they have the chance to take the inside track on the SAC race if they beat Bishop Dwinger this week. In Class 5A and 6A, number 1 pick, Carroll, number 2, Homestead, number 3, Northrop, number 4, Warsaw. In Class 3A and 4A, the number 1 pick, East Noble, number 2, Bishop Dwinger, number 3, Leo, number 4, DeKalb, and number 5, Bishop Lures. And in Class A and 2A, number 1 pick, Adams Central, number 2, Bluffton, number 3, South Adams, number 4, Cherubusco, and number 5, East Side.
Former football coach, donut shop owner, dies. Tom Saylor, a longtime football coach in Michigan and Indiana and the founder of Tom's Donuts, has died at 83. Tom's Donuts announced Thursday. From the football field to the donut shop, Tom showed us all what it means to lead with passion, kindness, and joy, the Angola-based donut shop said in a statement. He poured his heart into his community, his family, and his faith. He was a beloved grandfather to 8 and a great-grandfather to 4, who will carry on his love, laughter, and tradition. Saylor was part of the inaugural football coaching staff at what was then Tri-State University, now Trine, in 1995, under head coach Dale Carlson. He later was the head coach at Angola, leading the Hornets to a 19-11 record over 3 seasons from 2003 to 2005. His greatest success as a coach came much earlier, when he steered Hudson High School in Hudson, Michigan to 72 consecutive wins from 1968 to 1975, setting a national record for longest win streak that stood for 22 years. He went 94-5-1 at Hudson overall. Saylor opened Tom's Donuts in 1970.
Here are the high school football picks in Week 6 by Victoria Jacobson, beginning with Bishop Dwinger, 4-1, at Northrop, 4-1. The SAC's stingiest defense, Dwinger, faces its highest-flying offense, Northrop. I'm going with the defense. Winner, Bishop Dwinger. Bishop Lures, 2-3, at Concordia, 0-5. The Knights have won 2 in a row and have perhaps hit their stride. Winner, Bishop Lures. Snyder, 2-3, at Homestead, 3-2. Homestead couldn't move the ball against Dwinger, but Snyder's defense has been porous. Winner, Homestead. Southside, 1-4, at Carroll, 2-3. Since the Chargers joined the SAC, they are 10-0 against the Archers. Only one win came by fewer than 30 points. Winner, Carroll. Wayne, 0-5, at Northside, 3-2. The Legends' passing game is clicking while Wayne's defense has allowed the most points in the SAC. Winner, Northside. Columbia City, 3-2, at New Haven, 1-4. The Eagles stumbled in the last 2 weeks, but their running game should be enough as the Bulldogs allow 36.6 points a game. Winner, Columbia City. Woodland plays Jay County, and Victoria is predicting the winner will be Woodland. Heritage plays Tipton, and Victoria is predicting Heritage is the winner. And finally, Blackhawk 1-4 at Toledo Christian, Ohio. 2-3. Victoria is predicting that Christian, Ohio will be the winner.
St. Francis delivering dominant defense to defiance by Josh Patterson for the Journal Gazette. Nate Jensen hopes that chaos on Saturday will lead to peace next week as the assistant head coach of defense for a St. Francis squad that has not allowed a point in 105 minutes 4 seconds. He knows that if his unit does its job against his alma mater, Defiance, at Bishop D'Arcy Stadium on homecoming day, it'll save him plenty of hassle from the rest of the coaching staff as well as former teammates during his days playing for the Defiance Yellow Jackets. To take this one lighthearted? No, not at all, Jensen said. This one means too much to me. I don't need to listen to my college teammates shooting me text messages or messages on Facebook and whatever. This one means a lot to me. I told the guys last week and during the bye week that I needed their full, undivided attention this week. And they've had a good week of practice.
Mural work, a personal best for Cougars star athlete, senior track standout, assist on electric works installation by Victoria Jacobson of the Journal Gazette. Track and field is not in season, but St. Francis senior Hannah Borsma is still plenty busy. In addition to preseason practice and classes, the Cougars thrower and heptathlete has an internship at Hartle Press, a business that uses letterprints printing to create greeting cards and wall art. And she also works at Fingerly Farms greenhouse in her hometown of Cherubusco. And then there's the biggest of her projects, at least by square footage. Borsma is one of three local artists selected to assist work on the Echoes of the Future mural, which covers 15,000 feet on the Union parking garage at Electric Works. The enormous project, which is being led by Australian muralist Damian Mitchell, was dedicated Wednesday and should be finished a week from today. It's the kind of opportunity that the Cherubusco graduate and studio art major was looking for when she decided to attend St. Francis. But even as she made that bold decision, she knew that she didn't want to give up track and field. In middle school, she competed in sprints and hurdles, but as she got more serious about weightlifting, she added throwing to her event schedule. At St. Francis, she was drawn to the javelin, an event that isn't contested in high school, and she also picked up the heptathlon, in which athletes compete in several track and field events.
This concludes the reading of the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette. The Journal Gazette is broadcast every weekday at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. Today, Friday, September 26th, we are sending birthday greetings to volunteer Aaron A., who reads the Journal Gazette. We're sure there are other birthdays today. If it is your birthday, we wish you a happy day as well. Your readers today have been Jennifer Wythe,
Stuart
Mitchell.
We invite you to stay tuned for the next program.
You've been listening to volunteers read the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette, which is broadcast every weekday at 9 a.m. and rebroadcast at 6 p.m. and 3 a.m. Check out our podcast of the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette and obituaries on our podcast page at audioreadingservicepodcast.com. Thank you for listening, and if you have any questions, please give us a call at 260-421-1376.